This is KPFT FM and HD1 Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender community. This is Queer Voices. And Deborah has a conversation with Ginny Burson, author of the book Olivia on the Record, A Radical Experiment in Women's Music.
In the Furies, we decided that we were pretty isolated. We were separatists, and that meant not only did we not work directly with men, we didn't even work with straight women.
We have music from lesbian artist Meg Christian. Queer Voices starts now.
This is Deborah Moncrief Bell, and I'm talking today with Ginny Z. Burson. She's a radical lesbian feminist, political activist, and community organizer who lived and worked collectively as a lesbian separatist with the Furies Collective and Olivia Records. Now, when I first embarked upon talking about her new book, Olivia on the Record, A Radical Experiment in Women's Music, I really thought it was going to be all about the music. And it is, but it started with the Furies. Ginny, tell me a little bit about who were the Furies.
The Furies was a collective of originally 12 women in Washington, D.C. We were lesbian separatists, and we basically came together. We lived collectively, we worked collectively, and we came together to develop really a political theory of lesbian feminism, and where we were trying to unite the ideas of feminism with the practice of lesbianism to provide a frame for thinking about our place in the world, the system of male domination, the role of patriarchy, capitalism, you know, just a few little things like that. We published a newspaper for about a little over a year, and it had no news. You know, it was a monthly and mostly monthly. And but we used the paper to put out our thinking about the meaning of feminism, about lesbianism, and about class and collectivity. The newspaper was distributed nationally and it had a very big impact, some of which we didn't even realize until more recently.
When I look at the list of people who were involved, it made me think of, the play Hamilton, right? And you had all those people that came together at a certain time in history and things happened. And that's the way it was with the Furies. There were these women that somehow collectively had come to a certain consciousness, and y'all were hardcore. Y'all really worked, y'all studied, you analyzed to develop this consciousness. I just thought I was a radical feminist until I started reading more about the Furies. And I understand that part of your story has to do with the fact that you were not allowed to play professional sports.
I wasn't even allowed to play really amateur sports. I mean, I really, you know, when I was a kid, I loved to play baseball. Baseball, not softball, baseball. That's what we played when we were little kids. And I was very good. And it was heartbreaking to me when I found out I couldn't even play Little League. You know, all I could do was play pickup games at school and after school. And, you know, eventually once I moved to Los Angeles and actually in DC, when I discovered that there were lots of women who really wanted to play at that point softball, and there were leagues and teams and everything, but it was so unfair that because I was really good, but there was no place for me to play except in these little pickup games. And the boys got to go be in Little League and whatever came after Little League. And then of course, varsity sports in school and et cetera, which was simply not available to girls when I was growing up. Actually, it's one of the great, I think, achievements of the women's liberation movement, of the feminist movement, is Title IX and the ability of women to play, to get scholarships and to get supported for their athletic ability and to play sports.
Yes. Title IX was incredible. And I never have been much of a sports person, but when we had the women's basketball here in Houston and the Houston Comets, and they won four championships back to back, I kind of got into it.
Uh-huh.
It was different. And I really enjoyed those years. I miss it. Now my big sports jam is figure skating. That's the only sport I give any attention to.
Do you skate?
I just like to watch it.
Okay.
So touching on the theories again, you had an ideological thought. And one of them was sexism is the root of all other oppressions. What are your views on that?
It's a good question. I don't know that I still think that's true, but it might be. I don't think I know, actually, to tell you the truth. And I don't think it matters. If you look through history, before there was race and racism, before there was capitalism and class oppression, there was patriarchy. There was the rule of men over women. There was the division of labor based on gender. And with the work that men did being more valued than the work that women did. And so I could make the argument that sexism is the root of all oppression. But what I think is important is that we understand that all of these oppressions are connected and that they are designed to put some people on top and some people on the bottom. And who that is and how that works varies from country to country, from time to time. But currently, and as far as I know, throughout history, there has always been a system of oppression that placed men over women, that placed the male over the female. We used to argue about this all the time, like, is the root of oppression capitalism or is it sexism or is it racism? And you know what? It doesn't matter. They're all there. They're all real. And they all have to be addressed if we're ever going to have liberation.
Suzanne Farr has done a great amount of work talking about all the isms and how they're interconnected. It says sexism is not the bad behavior of some men. It is a system of oppression that operates on a personal level as well as on an institutional and structural level. I think that is the essence right there.
That's right.
And then you also, you say, because lesbians are outcasts from every culture, we will be natural allies across class, race, and national lines. Lesbians have the most to gain by actively engaging in ending class, race, and national supremacy. Lesbian feminism necessarily includes struggles against racism and classism, overthrowing the patriarchy, ending male supremacy inherently means ending race, class, and natural supremacy. Women of color, for example, will not be liberated by feminism if we do not end racism. Vietnamese women who were being victimized by the U.S. war machine will not be liberated by feminism if we do not end U.S. imperialism. We understood intersexuality before there was a term for it. And that really hit me because I got involved in the late 70s with the National Organization for Women, and it was always about intersectionality for me from the very beginning. So some of the struggles that we have had in the LGBTQA+, et cetera, movement with people understanding the importance of intersectionality. And then when I was the national organizer for the March on Washington in 1993, that was a core tenet of the work we were doing. If we include everybody or it doesn't matter. So I really applaud that you had that vision. So tell me how you did espionage and you seduced Meg Christian so that she could be an ally to help further your cause.
Yeah. Well, it didn't exactly work that way. I didn't exactly succeed in seducing her. Actually, it was the other way. Meg was a wonderful musician who was performing in nightclubs in Washington, D.C., and she had not started writing music yet. She was doing a lot of covers, and actually that's how we found Chris Williamson was because Meg always went to the record stores and would go through the bins and find music that she thought looked interesting. And that's, and she found Chris's first album. In the Furies, we decided that we were pretty isolated. We were separatists, and not, that meant not only did we not work directly with men, we didn't even work with straight women. There were other lesbians in DC. We certainly knew about it. We saw them at the bars, which were really the only places we had to go, and the softball field, of course. And we decided we needed that it was likely that we were going to need friends and allies in the community, because we felt like the government could come after us. And you have to understand that at that time, the J. Edgar Hoover was running the FBI, and COINTELPRO, which was a program, an FBI program basically designed to infiltrate and destroy the left. And they did a really terrific job on the Black Panther Party of working inside to help destroy it. And so we had reason to be concerned, and we thought that it would be to our benefit to have friends in the community who were not part of the collective, but could rally around us. And so I was given the assignment to get Meg to be an ally. And we didn't think Meg was very political. She was basically singing a lot of love songs and other songs, but we thought she had a stage, she had people come hear her, and she would be an important person to get on our side. So I was supposed to convince her to be more actively politically engaged. And so we went to the bar, and my strategy was to wear one of my good pairs of jeans and my good flannel shirts, because that was kind of the lesbian
does it every
uniform.
Time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I asked her to dance. And there was just an electric charge between us. And shortly after that, I asked her out on a date. And I think we went to see Lily Tomlin was our date. And then we became lovers. So much for me seducing Meg. Actually, I think went the other way around.
Yeah. Well, for many of the listeners of Queer Voices, you're familiar with Meg's music because you've listened to Queer Music Heritage with J.D. Doyle, and you certainly can go to his website and hear interviews and more about the other artists that were involved in Olivia. Having been on Pacifica, we have played a lot of music by what is known as women's musicians, and sometimes spelled women with a Y, women's music. I always say it was the soundtrack of my life, but more especially it was the soundtrack of me coming out, which I didn't do until the 80s. So those were very heady times with lots of concerts and lots of radio shows that featured the music. There was Breakthrough on KPFT, and I scheduled my day on Friday mornings. I think we had 2 to 3 hours sometimes. You know, I made sure that I could listen to Breakthrough with Pokey Anderson and Cherry Wolf. So it's been a very important part of my life.
And Pokey, I mean, and it was all connected, you know. Pokey Anderson was actually the Houston distributor for Olivia Records and for women's music.
Right. We had Hazel Witch Productions.
Uh-huh.
And I was a volunteer with them, and I also volunteered with Breakthrough. And that's kind of how I first got into doing radio, was as a volunteer helping at the station and with the shows. You call the chapter with Meg, which is chapter 3. You go all the way to chapter 3 before this gets introduced. Meg, Music, and Magic. And I just love that. But let's touch back on the Furies just for a moment. Name some of the women that were part of that. I mean, like I say, it's just amazing that these particular women were able to meet and work together at that particular time and place.
Well, the ones that people have probably heard of are Rita Mae Brown, Joan Byron, also known as Jeb, the photographer, Kalita Reed, who was one of the founders of Diana Press, Charlotte Bunch. I don't know. I mean, I could name the rest of them. It was Jennifer Woodall, Tasha Peterson, Susan Hathaway, Nancy Myron, and Lee Schwing and Helene Harris and Sharon Devey.
Now, are they all still with us?
No. Susan Hathaway passed away a number of years ago. Everybody else is still with us.
Wow. That's pretty impressive, actually.
Yeah.
So you get with Meg and she's doing music. And then at what point did this develop into, we want to have a women's record label?
So a couple of things happened. First of all, the Furies broke up and the collective broke up. And I was trying to think about, what is it that I want to do next? What is my political work going to be? So that was one thing that was happening. And another thread that was happening was that Meg was kept getting fired from the nightclubs that she was working at because the club owners would accuse her of, quote, bringing in the wrong clientele, meaning groups of lesbians would come into the clubs because we wanted to hear Meg sing. And we were not, you know, lesbiating all over the club. We were just being ourselves. But it was
lesbinating?
Yeah, you know, whatever. But apparently just our presence was pretty threatening. So it occurred to me that the women's liberation movement was kind of flowering at that point. And women's centers were popping up around the country. And so I suggested to Meg that she make a tape. And in those days, we made tapes of some of her music and that we send it out to women's centers and women's colleges on the East Coast and see if we could get her some jobs so that she could get out of having to be, you know, having to work at the whim of these club owners that were threatened by the presence of women in their clubs. The other thing that happened was that we saw how impactful Meg's music was on the women in the straight women in the audience. We already knew how impactful it was on the lesbians. But, you know, I would go watch her perform at the clubs and go into the bathroom because I had to go to the bathroom and there would be women in there sobbing. And when I asked why, what was the matter? Did they need help? It was like, no, it was somebody had actually seen them. There was a performer on stage who was singing about their lives and was not flirting with their male dates. And this was a new experience for them. And putting all of those things together, then we started putting out the word to some other women in Washington that we were, you know, looking for some kind of a project and we didn't know what it was. And we started having meetings. So all of these things are kind of burbling. And then we met Chris Williamson. She came to town. She had been living in California. Of course, Meg had been performing some of her songs. So the women's community, the lesbian community in Washington knew Chris's music. She had never been to DC before. And her record, which was put out on the Ampex label, had been discontinued. Meg had found it in the bargain bin. So she came to DC and did a show and we all went. And in the middle of the show, she started singing a song, which was Joanna, and she forgot the words. And the whole audience started singing the words. And she was kind of blown away, like, what? How is this possible? So after the show, Meg and I introduced ourselves to her. And okay, there's a long story, much longer story that's in the book. But the point is that we then got invited to be part of an interview with Chris on feminist radio, on Sophie's Parlor, which was on a college station in DC. And in the course of that interview, Chris said, we were joking around about women's tap dance companies and women's, you know, construction companies. And Chris said, why don't you start a women's record company? And it was, for me, the light bulb went off over my head.
Yeah, she waved a magic wand.
That's right. And it pulled together all the threads of getting the music out and finding a way to get to women's hearts. You know, the Furies was very much directed to women's heads. The music we saw got into women's hearts, and I began to believe that this was the way to really affect change, was through the heart. And so, you know, we gathered our group together again, and Meg and I had prepared a whole presentation about why we should do a women's record company and what it would be like. And we put it out to our group and they said, yeah, let's do it. So we did it. We knew nothing. We knew nothing about
But that never stopped us, did it?
No, it did not. And that's what's so was one of the things that was so exhilarating about those times is that we didn't think that, in fact, it was part of our ethos almost, that if you'd say we can't do it, we will make sure we do it.
Well, this is Deborah Moncrief Bell, and I'm talking with Jenny Z. Burson about her book, Olivia on the Record, A Radical Experiment in Women's Music. We have just touched, talk about tip of the iceberg. And if anything, this can serve as a teaser. I encourage people to go to Queer Music Heritage, listen to some of the music, learn who the artists are, the legacy of Olivia Records. And I always tell J.D. Doyle that Queer Music Heritage isn't just about the music, but about the history of our movement as well. So I think it's really important that people know. And also, some of the best music ever made was done by these women. So I encourage people to check it out and find out more. And Jenny, I want to thank you for being with us today on Queer Voices.
It's a pleasure. I love talking about Olivia Records, and I love talking about how lesbian feminists changed the world.
And I'm going to close with this statement from Vicki Randall, a musician who was one of the original people involved in Olivia Records. And Olivia Records has transformed now into a travel company. So I know they're planning trips. I'm not sure how realistic that's going to be until we are more clear of pandemics and stuff. But they also are doing features on Facebook where some of the artists are performing. So check out Olivia Records online and you can get your dose of lesbian feminism music. So this is what Vicki Randall says. The women's music movement was a revolution for rights and dignity, carving out a space where none existed before, for women to seize ownership of their own narrative, for lesbians who had never been reflected in popular music, for women to write love songs to other women, a small collective of idealistic women with absolutely no experience in the music business created a model that would change the landscape for all women, indeed for all people. So thank you, Jenny Z. Burson, for your contribution, and we'll be checking you out further down the road.
Thank you, Deborah.
Oh, I didn't even mention your career with Pacifica, but you had a long career with Pacifica as well.
I did, yeah, but I think that's a story for another day.
Yeah, maybe we'll get back and talk about that sometime.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And this is Deborah Moncrief Bell. You've been listening to Queer Voices.
Get down off the ceiling, Joanna. Let's sit and talk for a while. It's been so long since I've seen you, and I really need to see you smile. I'm standing on my feet. It's so hard to talk when you're flying so free and easy. Either I go up or you come down. Your high sea of silence, it's surrounding me. Sleep at night. Do you have enough time? it down off the ceiling. Joanna, let's sit and talk for a while. It's been so long since I've seen you, and I really need to see you smile.
This is Queer Voices.